37. Honor woke up to find Kludge kneeling over her, holding her tiny shoulder in his huge, meaty hand. Runt sat next to her, whining a bit. When Honor looked at Runt, the dog stopped whining and rested her head on Honor's thigh. Honor pushed Kludge's hands away and sat up, rubbing her eyes. She had fallen asleep, watching the bastards practice flying the dragons. She looked up and saw that they were still up there, steering their dragons in long, relaxed curves, or the occasional banking slalom.
I'm a bit hungry. Think I could get a scone?
Stretchy's been making them dragon-sized, but I'll have him break a corner off of one for you,
Kludge said.
I hope you haven't used up all of my flour and butter. Sonny and I traded a lot of mutton for that.
We did use up what you had, but I sent Gripper into town to replace all of it and get enough to make scones ourselves.
Oh,
Honor said.
Good. What did you trade for it?
Kludge laughed, looked at Honor for a long moment, then decided to change the subject.
Your brother's name is Sonny.
He said it like a statement, but he had meant it as a question.
Yes. I just had a dream about him.
From the way you were shouting, Sonny, I figured it was either that or you were dreaming that you were a deaf old lady.
Wow. They're getting pretty good at that.
Honor pointed at the other gang members drifting around the sky on the backs of dragons. Now it was her turn to change the subject.
Better than I ever expected, Kludge said. The dragons seem to like being ridden. It's like they go into a kind of trance. I wish horses were as easy to ride.
The boys seem sure of themselves. Seems brave of them to be going so high.
What's the point of riding a flying dragon if you stay close to the ground? Besides, it ain't an accident that gangs are made up of young men who have nothing. We value our lives little enough to risk them for a little money or a lot of fun.
Still only three dragons? We haven't found more?
No, but that's fine. Might be better. We can double up this way. We could patrol the skies and attack any wizard we see. We'll take it in shifts until we actually find one of them. Then I figure one guy can fly the dragon, and a second will ride behind him, tied together at the waist. They're practicing it right now. The one in back can throw rocks or shoot arrows. Maybe taunt the wizards. Anything that makes them unhappy. They're practicing with the rocks right now.
Why start with rocks? Arrows seem like a better weapon.
Yeah, but before we can get any archery practice, we'll need to steal some bows.
Honor looked past the dragons at the sky itself. It was late enough that she wouldn't be quite comfortable calling it late afternoon, but she also couldn't quite call it early evening.
So what do you think? Are you planning to go after the wizards tomorrow?
Yeah, we could be in Ledchurch by nightfall, but it's been a big day. I figure the lads will be more dangerous after a good night's sleep.
Kludge, do you think you can really beat the wizards?
The dragons are the break I've been waiting for. I'll never get a better chance.
But can you really do it?
Yes, I believe I can.
Why?
Because I have to believe I can, or believe that I can't. Those are the only two options, and I don't want to believe that I can't.
Honor said.
I guess we'll find out for sure at dawn.
Yeah,
Kludge agreed.
Unless something happens that makes us attack sooner.
They both saw movement in a part of the sky where there were no dragons. It was Philip, flying into view.
Something like that, Kludge said.
Philip stopped all forward flight and looked at the dragons, clearly stunned to see people riding them. Kludge pointed up at Philip and shouted,
Attack! Attack! It's a wizard! Get him!
The three dragons turned sharply in the air, making tight spirals until their riders caught sight of Philip. Then all three started to converge on his location. On the ground, Stretch came running from the spot next to the fire he'd been occupying most of the day.
Do you
what I should attack too, Klooch. I only ask because I have a batch of scones baking. They aren't quite ready yet, but they're due to come out soon. It's really easy to burn them if...
Klooch shouted, Stretch, stay with the scones. Then he shouted toward the dragons, Pounder, get down here now.
Pounder was the one bastard riding solo. He peeled off from the other two and descended back to the ground. Gripper and LL guided their dragons into a swooping dive to intercept Philip. They flew in rings around him, while only Donnie and Heelkick rode behind them, each carrying a large sack full of rocks. Philip recognized the bastards, of course. Anyone who lived in Leadchurch and wanted to keep all of their teeth knew how to recognize and avoid the gang. Philip, as a wizard, was invulnerable to physical attacks. As long as he had his powers, the only non-magical ways to kill him were to starve him, smother him, or deny him water until he died of dehydration, none of which were part of the standard street-tough repertoire. They couldn't hurt him, but they could easily hurt other people, or themselves, so Philip decided to try starting with diplomacy.
Gentlemen, good to see you. I must say I'm impressed that you've managed to learn to ride dragons. You seem quite adept, and I know you haven't had much time to learn. Congratulations. If I might inquire, what's in those bags? The ones the passengers are carrying. Yes, what is that?
A small rock bounced off of Philip's head.
I see. They're rocks, he said, shielding his head with his arms as best he could. Yes, both of you have rocks. Look, there's no need to keep throwing them. I'm fully aware that you have rocks. Aren't you better than this? Riding dragons and using them as a platform for rock throwing? Really? I mean, they aren't even hurting me. You can see that. They bounce right... Oof! Okay, very good. You got one in my mouth. It was blind luck, but still, bravo!
The dragon riders kept circling Philip, pelting him with rocks. Philip said,
Persona Shildo!
The rock stopped hitting him, instead bouncing off of an invisible force field cylinder that surrounded him.
There, see? Your rocks can't hit me anymore. Now if you'll excuse me, I have to make a quick call.
Pounder brought his dragon, the only one with those tough-looking horns, down next to Klooch. One of the primary skills that all of the bastards had mastered was the ability to anticipate what Klooch wanted. It went without saying that you gave Klooch whatever he wanted, but the bastards who managed to stay in the gang and remain healthy tended to try to give him what he wanted before he requested it, as Klooch's requests usually came with some form of physical abuse. Pounder pushed himself further back on the dragon so that Klooch could take control and said,
Come on, boss! Let's go!
Klooch hoisted himself onto the dragon's shoulders, then shoved Pounder off of the beast's back. Pounder landed on his side and rolled, trying to get wind back in his lungs. Klooch said,
You stay here and watch the girl.
Honor said,
Yeah, watch me go with Klooch to fight the wizards.
No, Klooch said, You aren't coming with me.
Honor had already shoved Runt in her carry bag and was pulling herself with great difficulty up onto the dragon's back behind Klooch.
Fine, she said. If you don't want to go with me, stay here, but I'm going after the wizards.
Klooch bared his teeth at her and growled. When that had no effect, he bared his teeth again and growled,
All right, hang on then.
Pounder lay there, dumbfounded by what he'd seen. Not the sight of a man, a girl, and a dog flying away on the back of a dragon, but the sight of Honor standing up to Klooch and getting her way. The rest of the wizards appeared suspended in midair around Philip.
Okay, Martin asked. What's going on?
Philip said,
Klooch and the bastards found the dragons and figured out how to ride them.
Jeff spun around.
Hey, the dragon riding algorithm seems to work great, doesn't it?
That's really not the point, Philip said.
Gwen cried out, more in surprise than pain.
What was that?
Probably a rock, Philip said. They're also throwing rocks.
Gwen rubbed the back of her head and said,
That's just petty.
She quickly created a force field around herself to repel the rocks. The other wizards followed suit, showing Gwen that she'd had a good idea without lowering themselves to actually telling her. The onslaught continued, but now, instead of hitting the wizards and causing them to flinch involuntarily, the rocks bounced off their invisible barriers, causing them to flinch involuntarily. Tyler said,
"This isn't good."
Roy countered,
"No, it's great. Phil wanted to put on a bit of a show for the people in town to rehabilitate our image. What'll look better, getting rid of three dragons or defeating the town's most feared hoodlums while they're riding dragons with intent to harm us?"
"Again, with the air show concept," Jeff said. "We tried to grandstand earlier, and you saw where that got us?"
"Yeah," Roy said, "but we learned from our mistake."
"Did we? I know I did, but did you? I'm not so sure."
"Kid, what are the odds of things going south on us twice in one day?"
"Given that it's us, pretty good."
Roy turned away from Jeff and toward Philip.
"Look, they're trying to hurt us, right? We'll keep them focused on us, lead them around the outside of town, or very high over it, not down in the streets. Then, after we've put on a little bit of a show, we separate the guys from the dragons somehow and take the dragons out. It's a good plan."
Jeff said,
"Good plans almost never contain the word somehow."
Philip bit his lip, thought a second, and said,
"Yeah, okay. But we try to keep them from going over the town itself. And we only play with them for a minute, two, tops, before we get rid of them. Got it?"
A few of the wizards said yes, as if this was the best idea they'd ever heard. The rest said yes, as if it was the worst. Gary pointed off into the distance.
"Lead Church is that way. I guess we should get a move on."
He set out first, but all of the wizards followed very close behind. Philip left last, partly because of his lack of enthusiasm for the plan, but mostly because he was distracted and confused by something he had seen as the group left. Britt noticed that Philip seemed preoccupied, flying forward, but continually looking back. She decreased speed slightly to draw even with him.
"What?"
she asked. Philip shook his head, looked at her, and asked,
"What?"
"That's what I'm asking. What's bothering you, Philip? I can tell something's up."
"Oh, it's probably nothing. Just something weird I thought I saw."
"Given the current situation, I'd be curious to hear what struck you as being particularly weird."
Philip chuckled, then said,
"For just a moment, I could have sworn that one of the dragons is being piloted by one person who has three heads."
Kluge, Honor, and Runt hadn't quite reached the group when the wizards flew away. The other two dragons continued to circle around an empty chunk of sky while the riders and rock throwers decided how to react and dodged rocks that had been thrown while there were still intended targets in the crossfire. Any doubts about how to proceed evaporated the instant they saw Kluge fly past, yelling,
"After them fools!"
The wizards flew well below their top speed, but took great care to almost exactly match the dragon's top speed. They flew in a loose clump, mostly looking to the rear instead of where they were going. Behind them, the three dragons flew in a V formation, with the horned dragon ridden by Kluge and his passengers in the lead. Kluge sat across the dragon's shoulders with his legs hooked under its wings. He had a death grip on the edges of two of the scales on either side of the dragon's neck. He concentrated on catching up to the wizards while trying not to think about what would happen if he lost his grip. Honor would have said she was standing behind Kluge and her feet were resting on the dragon's back, but it would be more accurate to say that she was lying on Kluge's back with her upper body slewed far to the left so she could see around his head. She had her arms wrapped tight around his torso and was concentrating on catching up to the wizards while trying not to think about what would happen if she lost her grip on Kluge. Most of Runt's body was in Honor's sack, which was slung around her right side and laid on Kluge's back, a smallish mass of warm, dead weight. Her head protruded out into the open and stuck up and to the right so as to see around the other side of Kluge's head. She was concentrating only on how good the wind felt rushing over her tongue, because it was simply unthinkable to her that Honor would ever let her fall. Kluge looked at the makeup of the two sides and did the math. He counted eight wizards. On his side, he had three dragons, two of which held two men each, the third of which carried himself, Honor, and Runt.
Add all of them together, including the dragons and runt, that made 10 fighting on his side, which was more than 8, so the very laws of mathematics stated that Kluge would be victorious. He knew that this was terrible reasoning, but these dragons were the best chance he might ever get to show the wizards that he wouldn't be pushed around, and he didn't intend to let it slip through his fingers just because it was a terrible idea. The trickiest part would be finding a way to get the girl safely on the ground before things turned violent. He'd let her tag along because he hadn't had time to argue, and she had as much reason to want to see the wizards go down as anyone, but he had no intention of letting her be anywhere nearby when things turned ugly. One of the wizards, the older one in a light blue robe, kept looking back at him. The wizard slowed slightly, drawing in closer to Kluge's dragon. Kluge cursed the fact that they hadn't found a way to make the dragons breathe fire on command. If he had, he could have roasted the wizard like a big, light blue squab. The wizard got close enough to get a good look at Kluge and Honor and seemed horrified. The wizard flew through the air only feet in front of Kluge's dragon. He turned and, in a voice full of anger and reproach, said,
"Kluge! On the ground! Now!"
Town was pretty far from the bastard's camp and Honor's farm beyond it, as judged by people who had to ride horses along the winding, muddy road, walk along the same road, or push their way through the woods to get there. For wizards and dragons flying in a straight line at a little under 35 miles per hour, the trip took less than a minute. By the time Philip recognized what and who he was looking at, the town was close enough to see people walking around the buildings. Kluge scowled at Philip, but silently thanked him for the excuse to drop Honor off. He landed in the street outside the rotted stump. Philip landed in front of the dragon. He said something, but Kluge didn't hear. He listened instead to Honor, who squeezed him slightly tighter and whispered in his ear,
"This one's their leader. I'll handle him. You go back up and help the others."
Kluge looked at her incredulously, then turned to Philip and said,
"What did you say?"
Philip said,
"Let the girl go."
Kluge's first impulse was to do anything but what the wizard had told him to. But Honor was already scrambling down off the dragon, and she seemed at least marginally safer on solid ground with one wizard than up in the sky clinging to a dragon surrounded by the other 7 wizards. Kluge gave Philip a look he hoped communicated the idea that if any harm came to Honor, he would kill Philip. He figured Philip probably misinterpreted it as a threat to kill him in any case, but Kluge didn't mind so much. Honor hit the ground. She pulled Runt out of her bag and put her down. Then Honor reached into the bag and locked eyes on Philip, but spoke to Kluge.
"Go!"
Philip shouted,
"Yeah, go, Kluge. Run! I knew you were a coward, but I didn't think you'd use a little orphan girl as a human shield."
Kluge reluctantly dug his heels into the dragon's ribs. As the great beast took off, he saw Honor start running toward Philip, and heard her shout,
"I'm not a shield! I'm a sword!"
The remainder of the wizards were still flying high above the outskirts of town, and found themselves in a situation familiar to anyone who has ever been attacked by a kitten. They were the target of an irritating and embarrassing assault by an obviously inferior force, and had to find a way to end the fight without harming the opponent, who seemed intent on murdering them. They flew in a tight group, followed by 2 dragons, the riders of which were still peppering them with rocks.
"Okay,"
Brit said as a rock bounced harmlessly off the force field behind her. "Ideas, anyone?" Gary twitched as a rock hit the force field near his head and said,
"How about we just yank them off the dragons one at a time, then take out the dragons when we're done?"
Gwen said,
"We'd have to be careful. Grabbing them by an arm or a leg with a force field at the speeds we're moving could easily break bones. Even if we got them around the torso, if we pull too hard, there could be internal injuries."
Britt asked,
"Do you have an answer to that, Gary?"
Gary said,
"No, I hadn't thought it through. Heck, I didn't even think of using magic. I meant just flying up and, like, grabbing them by the collar or something."
"And you expected to carry them all the way to the ground like that?" Brit asked.
"I already said I hadn't thought it through."
Tyler said,
The point is, we have to get the bastards off the dragons gently, in a way that they know they're supported. We don't want them to think they're fallen and die of a heart attack.
Yes, good point, Britt said. The most important thing is to get this done without any non-wizards getting hurt, even the ones attacking us.
A rock nearly, but didn't quite hit Britt in the face, causing her to cringe and mutter a string of obscenities. Gary asked,
Are you sure we can't hurt them at all?
Britt chose not to answer.
Roy said, I have an idea. The dragons sail right through our force fields, but the people riding them wouldn't.
Martin said,
Yeah, we can screen them off.
Yeah, Roy said. But if we just throw one up in front of them, it'll be like running full speed into a brick wall, and the dragon's wings would crush their legs. I think, though, if it was a spherical force field that appeared around them, then moved forward clear of the wings, then straight up, it'd pull them off with nothing worse than a few scrapes.
Tyler added,
And if you make the bubble glow or something, they'll know they're held up by something. Yeah, but it'll take me a few minutes to program.
Britt said,
I'm sure it will. In the meantime, we get to try out our anti-dragon macros on live targets. Just remember, keep it strictly kid gloves.
Gary pumped his fist, said,
Woohoo!
Martin said,
I think kid gloves means no Uzi, Gary.
Maybe? Or maybe it means I only fire my Uzi over their heads.
Philip was in a similar predicament. An opponent who couldn't possibly hope to defeat him was attacking him nonetheless, but his friends faced an at least formidable-looking force, in the sky fairly distant from the citizens of Ledchurch. Philip faced the town's favorite orphan girl in the middle of the street. The locals hadn't come out to gawk yet, but the sight of a dragon ridden by the town's top bully, landing in the street, followed closely by the town's top wizard, had drawn everybody to the windows, especially in the tavern, where watching people fight was one of the primary pastimes. Philip hadn't fully processed this, or much of anything. Having the girl he thought he'd rescued prove just as hostile as the man Philip had rescued her from, then start frantically rushing him while screaming bloody murder, caused his entire nervous system to freeze. Honor suffered no such paralysis. Her mind and body were both working far faster than normal. She closed the distance between herself and Philip in no time at all, then used her momentum to give her attack more power. Honor was a girl, but she had a brother, and had had a father, both of whom wanted her to be able to protect herself. They had each, at one point or another, explained to her the best, and by best they meant worst, place to kick a man. That is where she attacked Philip, but instead of kicking, because of her shorter stature and running start, she chose to punch instead. Philip was a wizard. This meant he was impervious to physical damage. But this was not the same as being immune to pain. Impacts could still hurt, and impacts to the area Honor had targeted still hurt quite a bit. This was a substantial weakness for the male wizards, but nobody had thought of a permanent solution to resolve it. In the end, the wizards decided that the best way to protect that area was to act in such a manner as to keep people from wanting to hurt that area in the first place. It was a good plan, which hadn't worked in this case. Philip doubled over in pain and dropped to his knees. Honor stepped back and said,
That was for my brother.
Philip knew Honor's situation, including the fact that her older brother, barely more than a boy himself, was raising her. Hearing her mention him triggered the memory of how he and Martin had taken care of Tyler and Gary's problem involving a child.
Where is your brother?
Philip asked.
I'd like to talk to him.
You don't even know,
she shouted.
That's how little you lot care. You don't even bother to find out which of us you've hurt.
What?
You heard me. You wizards play your silly tricks and lord your power over the rest of us, and when we get hurt, you can't bother yourself to find out who we even are. You just hit us with a sleep spell so we won't complain and go on about your merry way.
Philip searched his memory like a criminal tossing a room in an old detective movie, eventually coming up with the name.
Sonny.
He looked at Honor. Hearing her brother's name had silenced her for the moment.
Philip glanced around and saw that people had started filtering out of the tavern and the various other huts and hovels that lined the street, drawn out by the sounds of a fight, the promise of possible magic, and the absence of Kluge riding a dragon.
"Your brother's name is Sunny, right?" Philip asked. "Was he hurt in the dragon attack? Is that what you're saying?"
"Yes!"
Honor shrieked.
"That's what I'm saying! Your dragons attacked our town! You tried to keep us from hurting your dragons! Sunny got hurt! You put him under some sort of evil sleeping spell and left without even saying you were sorry!"
"He's not under an evil sleeping spell."
"Then why won't he wake up?"
"Because of magic,"
Philip said, wincing at how bad it sounded even to him.
"Okay, it's a spell, but it isn't evil. It's just to give him time to rest and recuperate from his wounds. It's meant to assist people who are hurt."
"People you hurt!"
"We didn't hurt your brother,"
Philip said, trying out his being firm voice.
"Some of the people were injured running from the dragons, and some were injured fighting the dragons, but nobody was attacked by a wizard."
Honor, being a child, had the innate ability to tell when an adult was simply trying out their being firm voice, and as such pressed her attack.
"And I know that you wizards were keeping the dragons like livestock. I saw the pen you kept them in. You trained them to attack. You might have even created them."
Philip realized instantly that everything Honor had said was true. He also recognized that admitting any part of it would be disastrous. He had no children, so he didn't feel comfortable just deliberately lying to a child. He looked around at the people watching, people he considered friends and neighbors. He shrugged and made a facial expression that said,
"Kids, am I right?"
More than one of the spectators replied with an expression that seemed to say, "The kid's got a point." In the air high above Lead Church, seven wizards did their best to confuse five men riding on three dragons. Gripper and Heelkick were chasing Brit to pelt her with rocks, when suddenly there were many of her, all identical, all laughing at them. Heelkick wound up to throw a rock and froze, suddenly seized with a crippling case of option paralysis.
"Oh no!"
Heelkick shouted.
"Oh no, no, no!"
"Throw!"
Gripper shouted into the wind.
"There's too many of her!"
Heelkick cried. Gripper shouted,
"Thou just make her easier to hit!"
Gripper did his best to maneuver the dragon through the brick cloud, but he had difficulties because the Brits kept moving. When he finally managed to find his way to clear sky, he immediately had to make a tight turn that devolved into a dive in order to avoid hitting another dragon. He feared it was Kluge, but as the dragon gave chase, Heelkick said,
"Oh God, there's nobody riding it!"
Gripper worried that one of the gang members had fallen from their dragon. He couldn't help imagining their terror at falling, and only snapped back to reality when a voice called out,
"Hey, you two, up there on the dragon I'm chasing. I don't want to see you get hurt. Land and get off of the dragon now before things get ugly."
Gripper asked,
"Who said that?"
Heelkick answered,
"The dragon! The dragon chasing us said it!"
Elsewhere, Kluge fended off an attack from Gwen's clothing. He hadn't even been chasing her. She flew down in front of his dragon, then her robe grew to fill his field of vision, slapping him lightly in the face as it rippled in the wind. Kluge had plenty of experience as a fighter and knew how to use an opponent's attack against them. He grabbed a handful of the fabric and yanked back as hard as he could, intent on stopping Gwen's forward motion, but the fabric went completely slack, stretching and expanding faster than he could pull on it. He grabbed another handful and pulled, then another, hauling back like a magician pulling an endless rope of knotted scarves out of a hat. Only Donnie and LL's dragon flew a serpentine path, twisting and turning in a vain attempt to lose Martin, whose immense silver glowing form dangled from their dragon's tail. Only Donnie shrieked,
"Get rid of him!"
LL had a death grip on the scales of the dragon's neck. He pulled and twisted with all of his might.
"I'm trying, but it won't let go.
How about you do something instead of panicking?
What can I do?
Only Donnie said.
I've already thrown all my rocks at him. I dumped the whole bag, then I threw the bag at him. Nothing.
But then find something else to throw.
How about you, Ella? I could just grab you by the earlobes and whip you around my head a few times to build up speed.
Martin shouted.
Don't feel bad, guys. At least you both know you've done your best.
In his peripheral vision, Martin saw a dark object, roughly the size of a person, falling. He assumed it was one of the bastards and prepared to intercept and rescue them before they hit the ground. But then a straight white line shot from the falling person and hit the dragon's right wing with an audible thwip. The line tightened into a cord, and the person falling swung into Martin with great force. Martin managed to keep his grip on the dragon's tail despite the impact. He looked over and saw Gary, hanging on to one of his Spider-Man webs. The dragon's tail and torso stayed relatively steady in flight. Gary's web was attached to the dragon's wing, which did not. While Martin's enlarged form only bobbed up and down slightly in the air, Jeff bucked up and down as violently as a roller coaster, and he whooped and cheered accordingly. After several seconds of this, Gary reached into his robe with one hand, pulled out his Uzi, and fired a burst into the air. Martin yelled,
"Gary! What did we say about the gun?"
Gary said,
"Relax! It's blanks!"
Then fired another burst. Martin said,
"That's not the point! It's the principle of all that thought!"
Gary said,
"I see Kluge!"
Gary let go of his web and fell away. Martin looked toward the two men on the dragon's back, both of whom had their necks craned around to look at him. Martin said,
"Sorry, guys. I gotta go have a talk with my friend,"
and let go of their dragon as well.
"Well, how do you like that?"
LL said.
"They're just ignoring us, like we aren't even a threat."
Only Donnie said,
"We aren't a threat. I'm out of rocks and they know it. Besides, are you really gonna complain because two wizards aren't attacking us?"
LL said,
"It's nice to feel wanted, is all."
Now far behind them, Kluge still circled high above Ledchurch on the horned dragon, but he no longer flew alone. He had finally given up on defeating the multiple Brits and Gwen's robe. He disengaged and only managed to fly a few precious moments unharassed before a white stringy substance shot into his field of view from above and struck the head of his dragon. The material seemed to be many long, straight strands of a rope-like fiber, held together by smaller threads to form a cable about as big around as a man's thumb. The cable thickened as its elasticity drew whatever hung from the other end closer to him, until finally Gary dropped into view, landing very fast, straddling the dragon's neck just behind its head. Kluge was very close to Gary, but he couldn't just reach out and grab him. Kluge only felt confident in his ability to stay on the dragon as long as he used both hands to do it. Gary saw that all of Kluge's limbs were occupied. He reached into his robe and pulled out his Uzi, which he held in Kluge's face, and said,
"Land this dragon now."
Kluge went cross-eyed looking at the Uzi, then leaned to one side and asked Gary,
"What's this thing?"
Gary said,
"What do you mean, what's this thing? It's a gun."
Kluge nodded and looked at the Uzi again, then asked,
"What's it do?" "What do you mean, what's it do? It's a gun. How ignorant are you?"
Behind Kluge, a voice said, "How ignorant are you, Gary?" Kluge looked back and saw Brit the Younger flying up fast. She made contact with Kluge's dragon and flew along, carefully matching the dragon's speed and direction so that she appeared to be standing casually on the dragon's back. Brit said,
"Guns aren't even invented until, like, over 100 years from now."
Gary said,
"What about cannons?"
"A cannon is a kind of gun. I think they might have them in China, but not around here for a long time."
"But we've screwed up the timeline so much. I'm sure a violent guy like Kluge has heard of them. How about it, Kluge? Ever heard of a cannon?"
"No."
"How about gunpowder? It's this black powder you can make that burns violently when you light it."
"I may have heard of something like that.
Well, that can be used to make a weapon.
Yeah?
Gary said.
Oh, yeah!
He fired a burst into the air to demonstrate his point.
If you put enough of it into a really strong tube and put a ball of, like, rock or lead in there, you...
Britt hit Gary with a blast of energy that knocked him off of the dragon. Gary fell out of view. Then a line of webbing streaked through the sky, barely missing the dragon's wing, then falling slack, pulled down by Gary's weight. Britt leaned over the side of the dragon and shouted,
"Remember! You can fly!"
Britt and Kluge made eye contact, sharing a brief chuckle at Gary's expense. Then, while Britt was distracted, Kluge threw the dragon into a sharp banking turn, followed by an equally violent turn in the opposite direction. He glanced back again, and Britt wasn't there. He had successfully shaken her off. He turned forward again and saw Britt slowly rise in front of him. Britt said,
"Remember, I can fly too."
While the other wizards enjoyed their participation in a one-sided contest they knew they couldn't lose, Philip was stuck in a battle he knew he couldn't win. An ever-increasing number of his friends and neighbors had gathered to watch him get shouted at by a young girl, which is always damaging to an adult's dignity, even if the adult is in the right. The constant angry yapping of her little dog certainly didn't help. Philip said,
"Listen, I need to go help my friends. Please stay right here, and I promise you won't be harmed when I get..."
Honor said,
"Don't threaten me!"
Philip sputtered for a moment before finally spitting out,
"I didn't! I said you wouldn't be harmed! What kind of threat is that? And can you please do something to calm your dog down?"
Honor said,
"You said I wouldn't be harmed if I do what you say, if I stay here and don't help my friends while you go fight them."
"All I meant was that you'd be safe here. As for helping your friends,"
Philip pointed straight up into the sky,
"the fight is up there. I can go there because I can fly. You can't."
"Don't tell me what I can't do."
"I'm not trying to tell you what you can't do. I'm just telling you that you can't..." "Look, I'm not ordering you not to fly. I'm pointing out that you're not able to. Can you please make the dog stop barking?"
"You think wizards are the only ones who can do magic? Well, you're wrong."
She reached into her bag and pulled out a small bundle wrapped in cloth. She shook the bundle. The fabric loosened and fell away, revealing the muck-encrusted idol Hubert had given her. One of the townfolk watching said,
"I've seen that before. It belongs to the necromancer. He sings to it in an unnatural voice while twisting and manipulating its limbs."
Philip rubbed his eyes wearily and said,
"One moment, please."
He activated the battle comm and said,
"Hey, Gary."
Philip heard Gary say,
"Sorry, Phil, can't talk. I'm busy webbing up a dragon so it can't fly."
Tyler's voice said,
"No, you're busy webbing me up so I can't fly."
Gary said,
"Oh, okay. Yeah, Philip, I've got a minute. What do you want?"
Philip asked,
"Did you lose one of your kiss dolls?"
The people watching knew he was communicating with someone, but none of them knew who or what he said. They all recognized his expression of displeasure when Gary told him not only that he'd misplaced the doll, but where and how. He deactivated the comm, looked at Honor, and said,
"I really don't think you want to be touching that thing. Why don't you just put it down?"
Honor shouted,
"Never!"
She and Runt both rushed Philip. Their sudden advance, and the object that led the advance, startled and horrified him so badly that he stepped backward, stumbled, and fell flat on his back. Honor stood over Philip, straddling his chest. Runt danced around his head, still yapping and snarling. Philip started to push her off, but Honor held the doll inches from his face. He turned his head away and grimaced, but he stopped resisting out of fear she might touch him with it.
"There!"
Honor said.
"You're afraid of it, aren't you? I knew it had power. It's not so much fun to have magic used against you, is it?"
"I'll admit I'm not enjoying this,"
he said, keeping his head turned to the side and pressed onto the dirt to gain as much distance as he could from the doll. Philip knew the doll had no magic. All of its power was biological and olfactory in nature. but he feared that any disagreement with a girl would only result in her pressing it to his face, an outcome he wanted to avoid at all costs. In his ear, Philip heard Roy through the battlecom say,
"Okay, the macro's almost done."
Philip decided to buy some time. If he could hold out, hopefully Roy's macro would distract Donner and all of the spectators long enough for him to gently remove her and the doll from his personal space.
"Fine," Philip said. "You've got me. What is it you want?"
Instead of showing signs of relief or triumph that she might get her way, Honor seemed livid that he even had to ask.
"I want my brother back,"
Philip said.
"We didn't take your brother. He's still here, somewhere. Where is he?"
"He's in the church with everyone else you hexed."
"Well, there you go, he's in the church,
and I don't like the word hexed, it suggests..."
Philip stopped talking abruptly as the doll got closer to his face.
"His body is in the church, but he isn't. He's gone. I want him back."
"He'll wake up soon."
"I don't want him back soon, I want him back now. You think you can just tell us how it's gonna be, and we have to take it because you have magic and we don't."
Roy's voice in Philip's ear said,
"There, it's done."
Honor said,
"You do what you want, when you want, and you don't care what anyone thinks or what it does to anybody's lives but yours."
Philip heard Gwen ask,
"It won't hurt them, will it?"
Roy answered,
"Who, the bastards? It shouldn't. I've tried to make it as gentle as possible. But if there are some bumps or bruises, hey, they attacked us, right?"
Honor continued,
"And why do you do it? To rub our faces in the fact that you're wizards, and we're not."
In Philip's ear, Martin asked, "So the macro will pull them off of the dragons?"
"Yep," Roy said. "And it'll make a nice show of it, too. Glowing bubbles of energy, lots of light and sound effects. Should make quite an impression."
Honor drew Philip's attention back to the conversation at hand by shaking the doll over his face and shouting,
"You're not even listening!"
"I am!"
Philip said as articulately as he could while keeping his lips pressed mostly shut, lest something should be shaken loose of the doll and fall toward his mouth.
"I'm sorry."
"Sure you're sorry now that I have magic too. You're not sorry for what you did to Sunny. We're just bugs to you, aren't we? We can't do anything to you, so why worry about us, right? And if someone comes even close to being a threat, you make them sorry. I don't know what you did to poor Kluge, but he won't discuss it. And fighting and pain are his favorite things to talk about."
"Look, I'm not happy about what happened to Kluge, but, I mean, he is Kluge. You can't say he's an innocent victim."
"Kluge and his friends have been kind to me and Runt. None of them has hurt us. You wizards have."
Philip rolled his eyes to look at the people watching. At first, he'd assumed that nobody came to his aid because he didn't seem to need help. Then he assumed that they saw he was in a mess and didn't want to get into the mess with him. Looking at them now, he saw that at least some of them weren't interfering because they wanted to hear what the girl had to say. Maybe some of the things she was saying were things they had thought before. The conversation in Philip's ear had continued, but he'd been concentrating on Honor and had lost the thread. Now he picked it up again and heard Martin ask,
"It'll keep the bastards neutralized?"
Roy said,
"Completely. They'll be stuck in energy bubbles, floating around in the sky for everyone to look at until we decide they're ready to come down."
Philip pictured it in his head. Then he pictured how it would look to the girl using his sternum as a stool, and all the people standing around watching. He activated the battlecom and said,
"Everyone! Disengage with the bastards and medevac yourselves now, before doing anything else! Now!"